The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning. I'm Celeste Headley. President Obama debuts at the United Nations today. He's going to be speaking before the General Assembly, but is he going to be talking as a beloved American or an ugly one? We're asking you about that. Does the image of the ugly American still exist? Is it still relevant? If so, what is the image of an ugly American? Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or send us an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. Well, we're talking to Raihan Salam. He's a fellow at the New America Foundation and blogger for the National Review. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Raihan said the honeymoon for President Obama with the international community is nearly over. We're also joined by Richard Wolff, journalist and author of the best-selling book Renegade, The Making of a President. So, Richard, do you agree? Is the honeymoon just about over?
Well, I think on international terms, we're reaching this sort of turning point where there's an expectation that Obama can deliver on some of these things that the international community is hoping for. But his popularity, honestly, if you look at the numbers, it's still incredibly high. The people have this love affair with him around the world. He's way more popular than he is than their national leaders. So if you look at the numbers, you know, you have to get kind of ahead of the curve to say the honeymoon's over, but they do want him to take steps on things that matter to them, and that includes tough stuff like climate change.
So, Raihan, what do you think, in your mind, is fueling his the end of his honeymoon period? Is it the U.S. role in the financial collapse?
I think that there's a structural tension between Obama maintaining his popularity at home and also maintaining his popularity internationally. I think it's absolutely true that he retains this tremendous popularity, in part because internationally, the folks who followed the election very closely started to tune out at a certain point. And now what they're going to find is that in terms of achieving some of his domestic political objectives, he's going to have to take a more populist turn, one that's going to involve taking steps away from, for example, free trade. It's going to involve taking some steps away in terms of sacrificing some of his goals on climate change. And I think that is going to engender an intense backlash, in part because President Obama raised expectations so high internationally, as is still reflected in those high popularity ratings that Richard was describing.
Well, clearly one of the things that Barack Obama said as he was campaigning was that he was open to speaking with any world leader, and he's now probably avoiding Ahmadinejad in the hallways of the United Nations. So there's one issue already where he's had to kind of take a step back. Is that affecting his perception of him abroad?
Well, it's tricky because it's not obvious that refusing to talk to Ahmadinejad directly is something that is actually diminishing his popularity in the Muslim world, insofar as actually Ahmadinejad's popularity within that space has also deteriorated. But it is a clear indication that the game plan is changing, and it's changing very, very fast for the Obama White House. This was going to be their big diplomatic break, and then they saw events overtake them. And even though they started sticking with the script early on, they had to change it midway. And I think you're also seeing that on Afghanistan, where the Obama White House's approach has been, we're the responsible ones. We're going to pursue a counterinsurgency strategy. And already they're saying, wait a second, maybe this is not going to work for us in domestic political terms. And that could create resentment throughout South Asia, for example.
Well, let's keep it outside of the domestic political calculus, because I mean that's really the dynamics of anti-American sentiment internationally. Raihan and Richard, I wonder if you could respond to this. Does a celebrity president or an individual charismatic leader drive this anti-American or pro-American sentiment, or are there deeper dynamics economically and otherwise that really determine America's place in the world that no individual leader can really overcome? Raihan?
I think that having the kind of charisma that President Obama has can make a huge difference. I think it can make him a more credible spokesman with international audiences. The reason why I'm reluctant to separate out the domestic political piece is that the same folks who think that Barack Obama is too cosmopolitan, that he's not sufficiently focused on the interests of the American middle class, are the people that he has to answer to because they're his voters. And so that creates a tension right there.
Richard?
Oh, look, anti-Americanism has a long and storied history. It's to do with America's rise and its power, its in the eyes of much of the rest of the world, it's lack of accountability. But I actually think having a popular president does make a difference. Look at Obama's speech to the Muslim world in Cairo. It's incredibly rare that you have a president where parts of the world, especially in the Middle East, are tuning in for the first time to hear what he has to say about their issues and their identity. You know, anti-Americanism can be overcome with some respect, some mutual respect, and that's what we're seeing. Whether you can translate that into something else in terms of foreign policy is the test they're facing now. But having people pay attention to an American message from an American president at a time when anti-Americanism has been very, very high, maybe at an all-time high, is something new. It's a departure, and it's an opportunity for a new administration.
So, Richard, let's just follow that up. Can he translate this, I guess, before his honeymoon ends? Can he translate his current popularity into foreign policy? This is what President Obama said yesterday at the beginning of a meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas.
We have to summon the will to break the deadlock that has trapped generations of Israelis and Palestinians in an endless cycle of conflict and suffering. We cannot continue the same pattern of taking tentative steps forward and then stepping back.
So those are some pretty strong words, but we've heard strong words out of previous administrations in the White House. Is he going to be able to translate this into some kind of political capital in the Middle East?
Well, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is a story of false dawns and dashed hopes, but what we haven't seen in the last two predecessors of President Obama is a personal engagement early on. Early on, this is the first year, this is the first few months. So to have a president doubling down on the Israeli-Palestinian issue, saying, well, we didn't get anywhere with settlements, but we're going to go straight to final status negotiations, that's ambitious. It's also putting a lot of his personal credibility on the line here. And, you know, peace processes can start in the most unlikely circumstances. You look at someone like George Mitchell, who had a key role in the Northern Ireland peace agreement. You know, the leaders then that he was negotiating with were very hard line, and he was negotiating on the back of major terrorist attacks by the IRA. So these things can take different turns, but again, the Middle East has been a sort of wasteland for peace right. efforts before. You know, it's not clear that personal popularity matters. What does matter is personal commitment from a president.
Well, Raihan, let me get your response to what's going on in the Middle East. I mean, it seems to me if Obama is walking away from the settlement demand that was the original position and going to final status, he's already signaled he's willing to cave on an important issue. Why don't the Israelis just respond the same way on final status, Raihan?
Yeah, I think that is a big issue. I think that when you're looking at the term Nixon going to China, the reason why it's so resonant is that you have to have a lot of credibility before you make this kind of a demand. And so, for example, traditionally American presidents would first try to get concessions from the Palestinian side, then go to the Israelis, and then bring pressure to bear. And I think the reason why Obama's efforts have not resonated in Israel this time around is that there's a sense among the Israeli public, and not just right-of-center Israelis, that the Americans are coming to them and asking for concessions without first getting those concessions on the Palestinian side. And so I think that there's a sense that Obama is not being quite as serious as, for example, Clinton was during his presidency. And I think that that means that when you see Obama shifting from time to time, when you see him make one set of demands and make a different set of demands, when you see him reverse on Ahmadinejad, when you see him possibly reverse on Afghanistan, there's a real question of who are we dealing with here? I mean, he remains kind of an enigma to international leaders who are inclined to like him but don't know who exactly they're dealing with.
Well, since you mentioned Ahmadinejad, White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs had some very tough words yesterday about the nuclear program there.
They've got some decisions that they're going to have to make that their failure to answer or failure to even talk about, I think, will further galvanize the international community.
Quickly, Richard, what's going to happen when the Ahmadinejad arrives? Are we going to see some tough talk under the nuclear program in Iran?
I'm sure we'll see some histrionics from Ahmadinejad, but listen, although Obama has backed off this idea of face-to-face talks, the negotiations, the sit-down that's going to happen next week, are the highest-level talks with Iran on these kinds of face-to-face, direct security issues we've ever seen since the revolution. So it's a big deal. It's a chance to obviously see whether there is any movement. And if it doesn't work, It's also a chance to rally support internationally for the kind of sanctions the administration has got against North Korea. So the idea that this is just another routine meeting is missing the point.
Is the ugly American a relevant concept, Richard Wolff, in the 21st century in the few seconds that we have? And Ryan, we'll get a quick response from you.
No, I don't. And actually, Obama's trying to play off it and say, look, I am defying your expectations because I'm a different kind of American.
Look
and,
at
and
me
that's
now.
Working so far.
What do you think of me now? Ryan, is ugly American a relevant notion these days?
Yeah, I think it's very relevant because the anxious American middle class is feeling its own kind of pain. But when you're looking at the developing world, they're looking
great
at Americans and thinking, hey, you know, we have way bigger problems.
Ryan Salam is the fellow at the New America Foundation, blogger for the National Review. We also heard from Richard Wolff, journalist and author of the best-selling book, Renegade, The Making of a President.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.